Hello and welcome to the Rogue Monkey Podcast. We're the show that shares inspiring stories from guests all around the world with the aim of giving you tools and experiences that you can use to help you on your journey. Thanks for all the love from last week's show featuring international footballer Alexei Fedoroshenko. We also this week recorded with Ethan Lawrence, star of Bad Education and Netflix's smash hit Afterlife. That episode will drop on Friday the 10th of February, so stay tuned for that. This week we've got a double act with actor, DJ and fashion designer Ollie Jackson and videographer, editor and former coach Graham Bell. I was fortunate enough to attend the International Podcast Show in London with these two legends last summer, and although it's taken a while to get it recorded, it's great to be able to finally share this episode with you. So with that in mind, we're going to get straight into it and explore what it's like having a career that veers off the beaten track. Episode 82 of the Rogue Monkey Podcast, featuring Ollie Jackson and Graham Bell. Hello, gents, and welcome to the podcast. How are you both?
Very well, thank you. Hello, Kevin. Nice to see you and hear you this morning.
Very good, my friend. Long time no see.
Yeah, it's the last time we actually saw each other was at a podcast conference, so it's quite a timely reunion.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm
very keen to explore both your journeys because you've got very interesting and I think for some people quite unusual journeys. So I don't know who wants to go first, but we'll put one of you in the hot seat to get us started. I can see a finger pointing at Ollie, so it looks like they're
all right. Apparently it's me. I've been thrown under the bus. So yeah, thank you very much for having us on, first and foremost, Kev. It's really exciting to be here and to be chatting to you. So my little bit about myself is I've been a professional actor for 25 years, working in Western musicals, television, commercials, all sorts of different areas of the business. And about 5 years ago, I set up, or kind of a bit of a happy accident, I set up a business or a company called Slimson, which is an online clothing brand. I've also, as well as being an actor, I've always been really passionate about house music, and I DJ. And I wanted to kind of come up with something that would celebrate the nightclubs that I used to go to down in London when I first came down from Leeds to come to drama school. And actually, these are on this top here, The Cross, Bagley's, Turnmills and The End, all great nightclubs that I used to go to, all closed down. And I had this idea that a bit like the John Paul, George and Ringo t-shirt that you sometimes see celebrating the Beatles, it might be quite fun to just have something on a t-shirt, on a sweatshirt that I could give to some mates at record label parties, and we could celebrate those clubs that I used to go to. And to cut a very long story short, they kind of blew up and everyone wanted to have them. I gave them to a few celebrities. Denise ran out and wore them. People who had good Instagram followings decided to wear the t-shirts, and they did really, really well. So I kind of realized quite quickly this could be something alongside the acting, which has been kind of really good to me in some ways, and other years have been really difficult. It is a hard job to be in. That could be something I could start to build and try and bring some income in for me. So I did that, and it's been brilliant. It's kind of, you know, it's done really well online and continues to do so. We do all sorts of other t-shirts away from this kind of classic Slimson font that we call it, and they do really well. And it's helped with the DJ work, and it helps alongside the acting, as I say. And that's really how Graham and I, well, we know each other through our swimming as well, which I'll come to in a minute. But certainly I've been able to use Graham and all his kind of design know-how and all the skills that I didn't have having gone to drama school to set and try and build this business up. But it's been an exciting journey, but one that I wasn't expecting, certainly. And as I often use the phrase, it was a happy accident, but excited to see where that might go. So that's a little bit about me.
I think there's a whole treasure trove of discussion topics we can go into, but I guess to set the other half of this playing field, Graham.
Hello, good morning. Let me see. I've kind of been in the fashion industry, if you want to call it that way, for a number of years. I mean, more hair, but it was kind of always fashion because you never really see a badly dressed hairdresser. They're always really, really cool. So clothing was something that I've always been involved in or wanted to be involved in, and always had a really, really big interest in. And also sport. I was a footballer for many, many years, and loved the grind. I loved the training and the combative nature of it. So I was always going to be try and get involved in swimming or try and get involved in football. But that was a bit difficult to try and get a club to go and teach and coach at. So I used to go along with my sons who started and learn to swim here in Leighton Buzzard. And I'm not one to sit on my hands. So when I was asked if I could come down and help out, initially on a computer just to help out run a competition. I just kind of said, yeah, no problem. I'd much rather be involved than to sit there, because there are so many parents that will just are quite happy to sit there and watch and let a very, very small number of people almost run these huge, huge organizations. And they are, you know, clubs are huge. People don't seem to realize, you know, there's hundreds of people within the clubs, not only the swimmers, they're the parents, the grandparents. So there is, it's a big, big pool of people that could be involved. But unfortunately, most of the time, it's very, very small people, a small amount of hardcore activists, I'd like to say. But anyways, I got involved that way and ended up doing level one teachers, level two teachers, and then my assistant coaches. And then I ended up landing the top job, the big dog head coach at the local club. And it was, I have to say, a roller coaster of emotions. It loved the competition, loved the training with, loved watching the swimmers progress. You know, it's like anything that it's the whole Kaizen kind of principle. It's literally 1%, and for them to take a hundredth or something off their PB was just great to see them. You know, so they literally the very, very small percentage that they would take, a cleaner turn, a head down on a finish, all those kind of things were awesome to see. And we were trying to instill that. And, it was a wonderful, wonderful part of my life. But unfortunately, these chapters have to come to a close. And, it was time for me a couple of years ago just to step away. I do miss it to a point. I miss the kids. That sounds a bit weird.
No, my kids miss you as well, Graham. It's not been the same since you've left. I'm not just saying that for the benefit of this podcast, but he's an amazing coach and hugely inspiring for the kids. And it's certainly not quite been the same since. They miss having him down there. So
thanks. The reason we kind of met because with our love of clothing, love of music, his kids were actually at the club, and Ollie's kids were at the club. And we just kind of hit it off. I saw him with one t-shirt. I said, "Where'd you get that t-shirt from?" He said, "Oh, I made it." I said, "You're joking." He said, No. Tell me what you want and I'll get, and he literally would come down and he'd give me a free t-shirt. So I'm like, I need to get involved. So this guy here is going to be my next boss. I'm holding this.
Yeah.
We need to make this work so I can go and work for him. So yeah. But yeah, it's been fun.
I think there's, what's really interesting, especially when I have these kind of quite diverse conversations, is actually where you end up, like you kind of alluded to already, Ollie, the happy accident. I think if I'd have pulled both of you guys up at 20 and said one of you was going to be designing T-shirts that were going to kind of permeate, if you like, the fashion industry, and the other one was going to be the head coach of the local swimming club, you'd have both laughed me out the door.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At what point, but let's cast your mind back, I guess, to the earlier parts of your journey, because there's a lot of people out there trying to find their way in the world. And I think the last 2-3 years, a lot of people have had time to kind of pause, reflect, start perhaps some side hustles, follow their passion a little bit more. But at what point did it go from, your traditional academic journey, if you like, into kind of finding your way into this your respective fields?
Well, yeah, I mean, for me, with the acting, it was something that I always wanted to do. Obviously, it's a vocation first, and it's one of those jobs that is a vocation, essentially. But, I mean, I'd always wanted to do it. So it's the one thing that I have, it's going from month to month about having a really good year or a bad year. It is what I do. It's in my bones, acting. So I've never sort of suffer with imposter syndrome with acting. It's what I've always done. I feel confident in that environment, regardless of how it's going. But with a lot of things that I do, a bit like the DJing, and I've only done that for the last maybe 9 to 10 years, and I do quite well with that and earn good money doing it, but I still have moments and days when I do feel that I'm not really a DJ and I'm going to get found out. And certainly that's true with the clothing side of things. And I suppose what I would say to myself is, as a youngster, is just try everything, because at the time, as a 15-year-old, all I wanted to do was be an actor. It's all I talked about, and I just couldn't think of anything else. And that's great, and I had that amazing enthusiasm, but you should never have regrets or look back. But I do look back a little bit and think, if I'd have just been a bit more like I am now, thinking, you can have lots of things to add to the ingredients of the pot and mix it up, and that'll be the making of you. I would have encouraged that, and I'd try and encourage that with my kids now, I think. So it's really weird. I sometimes have regrets and go, I wish I'd come to this sooner, because, you know, I'd have a greater understanding of social media. I'd be doing more parties every week. I'd be mixing with more people. I'd getting the brand out there. I'd be going to festivals week in, week out. And it's harder, you know, as a 47-year-old man with wife and kids and responsibilities to do all of those things. But I suppose in answer to your question, I would just say try everything. Don't feel that you have to decide you're going to be an actor. I'm going to be an accountant. I'm going to university because I need to become this. A lot of people that I know now, they do all sorts of things. And you know, you can be digital nomads. You can be making money from your computer. You can be, you know, teaching something 1 minute to somebody. I do that as well. I do all sorts of things. And I think that's kind of exciting. I think we live in a world where you can do all sorts of different things. You don't have to be labeled, I guess. And that's definitely what I would say.
I think you just hit a really, really valid point, which was something that I went through when I was coaching, was that, am I really doing the right thing? Do I really know what I'm doing here? And these people have to, are going to listen to me. So I was like thinking, Christ, I really, really, I'm doubting myself here. You know, and you'd have to go and present at the committee meetings about what your plans were, and, you know, without going into too much detail, but you'd have to, and I would be like, how am I doing this job? Why are these people, why have I got like 20 coaches all wanting to know what we're doing and kind of believe what I'm trying to, it was bizarre. It was really, really bizarre. And I just feel that as long as you're honest and transparent and try and listen more and speak less, I think you can become what you actually are, if that makes sense. And I think that was part of the understanding of becoming that head coach kind of role. It was an unfortunate circumstance that brought me into that role. Our ex head coach, wonderful man called John Honey, passed away, and I was his assistant at that time, and we worked really, really well. He came up with everything, and I just kind of delivered it. I was the delivery man, if that makes sense. Because I could kind of, I was one, that was one kind of good thing I could do, is I could talk. So hence why we met, Kev. I think probably we were chatting away on poolside. But when I actually got handed the role, it was just like, I really don't know what I'm doing. It was funny because there's no one really to speak to, possibly apart from my wife. She'd go, just do it, go for it. You know, start, you know, read a book, read a book. Listen, I mean, because back in 2015, YouTube was there, but it's not as prevalent now as if you want to find something out, you just Google it, which basically number one search would be YouTube, and you'll find the answer to your question. But yeah, self doubt was just like that. Used to kick me in the backside quite a lot.
Yeah.
But you couldn't let it out though.
I think we can dive into the kind of imposter syndrome and not being sure in a second, because actually that's an area in itself. But there was something I wanted to pick up on, thinking back to actually one of our offline conversations, and you'd said to me that you were going to watch a football match with your son. And then linking into the part that, you know, Ollie said about there around the responsibilities and, you know, wife and kids and all those sorts of things. And I think trying all these different things actually gives you a toolkit that when you get to a certain point in your life and it's more appropriate, sometimes, like you said, Graham, you do have to step away from certain things because at that point, perhaps they become completely overtaking everything. And as Ollie alluded to, perhaps going to a festival every weekend isn't quite the role model we're looking for when you've got young kids looking up to you. But equally, I think it's the experiences along the way. And actually, even from my coaching years, I look back and, you know, I miss the young athletes that I work with. I still see quite a few of them. You know, most of them are in their 20s now. But actually, it's a part of your life that was a great experience. There was some huge challenges of being, and I'm sure any coach out there will tell you it's a couple of hours a week, and then it quickly becomes every weekend, every evening, and all those sorts of things. So it is, but there are some wonderful things to come out of it. But I just like this kind of concept that actually you find things sometimes by happy accident that are a part of your life for a while, but actually sometimes you then need to evolve, or like a chameleon, adapt and change to become the next thing that's appropriate for that stage in your life. So, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, just kind of reflecting on that a little bit.
Yeah, and that, well, there's so many things in my life. It always seems to be like that. That I'm always, there'll always be something new that I'm trying. And I kind of think to myself, how often, and I'm genuinely kind of terrified and think, this won't work out. I won't know how to do this. And I'm a little bit addicted to that. That I, it's like thing from going in for an audition. You know, you feel that slight sense of dread, and then the adrenaline kicks in, but you get through, and then you get a positive outcome. And things generally, touch wood, always, I always say to myself, it won't be that bad. You'll look back at this moment and go, you did it. You did okay. Or you muddled your way through. I could count on one hand the amount of times that it just literally crashed around me. And I don't know whether that's just luck or just something kicks in. And I think maybe there's part of me that's kind of addicted to that change and trying things, although it is scary and I do suffer, as you mentioned before, maybe from this slight imposter syndrome with certain things, imposter syndrome, that I will always kind of get through, and that, you know, these changes are exciting, and maybe that's what I need. And actually, perhaps I kind of actively look for those sort of things without really realizing it, you know, kind of get a kick out of that. Yeah. I think.
Agree. I mean, to be fair, I mean, the relationship here is, it's quite funny. He's always up. Always up. I've never seen Ollie with, you know, having a down day, and it's always great to kind of be around him and have, because we always end up in fits of laughter wherever we are. I mean, we don't get to socialise as much as we probably would like to, but then again, that's good. As he alluded to, we both got families, and we have to behave ourselves. We're not 20 years old anymore, but it's always good fun to hook up, and yeah.
Wow. I'm glad you think that. I'm sure my wife, who's on the other side of this door, would say I definitely see when he's down in the dumps. But generally speak, I think, yeah, I like to keep things nice and frothy and be a positive person to be around. And I think
I didn't manage to make the Ibiza trip though last week.
No, well, you were missed. Yeah, came back in one piece, Kevin.
that was good for everybody involved, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So I guess jumping into the whole imposter syndrome stuff. I mean, my thoughts around it are always that it doesn't matter what level you get to. You know, I remember quite a few, I think eight seasons ago now, we had the current captain with Red Arrows on. And one of the things he said was, remember sitting in a room one day somewhere in the Middle East delivering a talk to a group of pilots, and somebody basically nudged him before the start and said, oh, by the way, the Top Gun class are at the back. And he was like, this is ridiculous. How am I standing here giving this talk? And I'm like, listening to his list of like accolades and everything he's done up to that point. And even at that level, you get told, you know, am I good enough to be here? Or in your mind, you're telling yourself, am I good enough to be here? So I do think there's an element of it's always there if you have that mindset of self-improvement and also staying kind of humble and grounded, because I'm sure we can think of plenty of examples where people get to a certain point and they're very aware they're at that point, and they perhaps feel like that makes them in some cases a better person than others. Whereas actually, I was listening to a discussion about Roger Federer's recent retirement and talking about how he was, you know, had a very humble background. And actually, when you talk to people who have spent time around his parents, they were like, it's no surprise at all that actually his personality and his humility was that way because his parents brought him up in that environment. So I guess for you guys, what are your views on how it does have some negative aspects, you know, it can feel like self-doubt sometimes, but also what are the positives that it gives you?
I think to just keep kind of, you know, it's kind of studying and finding out more, certainly with, you know, the clothing brand. If I've ever felt like I've completed clothing brand, you know, I've completed it, I would be like, well, you know, be a bit of a wally, wouldn't you? So I'm constantly trying to, you know, look at other people for inspiration, people that I kind of aspire to be like them. And I think that's very true. And even with the acting, I did say earlier, it's the one area that I don't feel that imposter syndrome. But even then, of course, I'm watching great actors, I'm watching series, new things, exciting things, things that I want to be in, trying to, you know, better myself with classes, all sorts of stuff like that. So I think most people, if they're good people and if they're kind of the people you want to hang around with, they'll always feel that they could always be better every day. You know, they're the sort of people I want to be with. I don't want to be with somebody who goes, yeah, acting, yeah, I know how to do that. Even the greatest actors, I know if you talk to them, it's happening, you know what I'm doing here. It's terrifying, and you know, I can't believe I'm working with such and such. And you know, that's happened to me on some levels. I've got to work with some amazing people, but you just always got to feel that you can learn from them. Just try and be nice. Be a nice person. Don't be a wally.
I completely agree. I mean, my main life or job is actually I work in an office where I don't necessarily want to be for the rest of my life. I want to be working, say, freelance or doing stuff that I want to do. But the whole imposter syndrome, you can tell people. We've gone through a massive change in the business recently where we've lost a lot of people at the top end of our company, and the company have hired in new people, and it looks like people have just walked into the job and they know everything, and you can just tell it by the swagger, the way they talk to people. And it's just, it's quite sad, if I'm honest with you. I mean, I've been there 25 years, and there's a reason why I've been, yeah, no, you just rolled your eyes. I've been there 25 years, and the reason being is because humility, humble. I don't know everything. If I don't know an answer to a question, I'll ask someone. But I guarantee if you went to these new people and said, can you help? Do you know the answer? They'll tell you, or they'll tell you their version of what they think it is. So you're right. It's, I think as you get older, your bullshit, sensor becomes more acute, and you can tell people, you can work people out. And it's, I think it comes with age. I think as you get older, you become more humble. You know, you feel more fortunate for what you've got. But there's some new people that in this day and age that are literally just, I don't know. It's quite sad.
I think I'm in the midst of trying to secure a house at the moment, and speaking to a lot of different representatives from estate agents, and that's quite an eclectic mix of people, shall we say, to people that have perhaps been there and done it and are a bit more wise and probably perhaps more people friendly, in the sense of they've seen perhaps some of the mistakes that have been made previously. Like, you know, I've had a few that feel like almost like the traditional car salesman of coming, you know, it's very spacious and I can reach out and touch both walls of my arms kind of thing. And I think that radar does, it certainly changes as you get older. And I think also it's being comfortable with not having all the answers.
Yeah, 100%.
I really think that, like, I had Simon Mundy, the BBC sports presenter, on the last series of the podcast, and he said something along the lines of, everyone's just figuring it out. Like, is just trying to figure it out. And we were, me and my wife have just finished watching Designated Survivor. I don't know if you've watched that. Uh-huh. And again, like, that was somebody, obviously it's a story, but the actual concept of it, of someone just doing the best with what they've got and asking for advice if they can't figure it out. And I think along the way, there's, like, there must have been times, especially like when you first delved into the clothing industry, for example, and you went, how does this work? You know, you'd be reaching out and asking stuff.
Yeah. And even now I'm thinking that, but looking back when I first started, because I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I literally didn't know what I was doing. My brother-in-law is a printer. We just used to, somehow we got these things out to people. And I was terrified. Every time an order came in, there'd be a mixed feeling of, like, it's amazing, but, oh God, what do I do? And I just genuinely didn't know what I was doing. But you kind of get to the point where I'm at now, and I go, my goodness, how much I've grown, but I've still got further to go. And it just, as I say, to repeat myself, it just shows, you know, you can do anything, really, as long as you just say yes. Just try saying yes.
And there's the detail also. Yeah. As far as the brand's concerned, it's you start then getting into the more detail of, like, the website. Mm-hmm. Are your images the right size? Sorry, we're getting a bit technical here, but are your images the right size? Are they, you know, the right ratio? All this kind of stuff. When you go onto a certain website and you look at clothing websites, every single clothing image is the same size. It's the same, you know, it just everything just looks standard format. Whereas when you first started, it was all over the place.
It's not embarrassing, but it was the way it was. And
but now it's,
of course, and that's through meeting people like Graham and just surrounding yourself with good people and knowing when to delegate. But that again is a challenge, because I'd be able to delegate all sorts of things, but that comes at a cost. Unless you've got, you know, people sort of helping you and bankrolling the whole operation and trying to upscale, that's a challenge in itself. So you do rely a little bit on trying to learn skills yourself, trying favors initially, and people that you are going to pay and help build, just get the right people, really. But just keep saying yes to stuff and then think, well, there'll be a way. We'll find a way. Just say yes. That's kind of the way that I operate.
Find a way. Now, I like that, because that was going to be one of the questions I wanted to ask you both. Like, when you come up to crossroads in either roles within your company, or you're going into a new industry, or you're just trying a new thing or a new product, what gives you that confidence, and where does that come from? Because I do think a lot of people are, I think it's some, I can't remember the exact saying, but it's something to the effect of, you know, you'll miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. And I feel like there's a lot of people who have actually incredible ideas and thoughts and projects they do feel really passionate about working on, but how do they get the confidence to take that first step, and how's that applied for both of you on your journeys?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I don't know if it's always been the way, but I certainly, going back to what I said about if I look at all the challenges that are put in front of me and how terrified I might feel about something, I just know that I'll get to, you know, if it's Saturday night, I'm worried about something, by the Sunday night, I'll be looking back with a glass of wine going, oh, I did it. I might have not done it exactly the way that I wanted to do, but it went okay. And so if I say yes to it, I'll focus my mind because I've committed to the person who's asked me to do the job or commit on the delivery of the items. And I think there has to be a way, you know, people are doing remarkable things every day, pale into significance, you know, with what I'm doing with Slimson. You know, they're saving lives, they've incredible jobs, and they're able to say yes and just to solve these things. But the least I can do is get myself together and learn some script at the last minute, or go and audition, you know, sorry, go and DJ for 2,000 people in a corporate setting that might make me feel sick. But I think I'll do it and I'll be so chuffed. And it's almost, I think it is like an addictive thing for me. I love the feeling of the fear followed by the absolute, like, oh, euphoria of completing that little part. And so I think, in answer to your question, how do people get to that point? And just start saying yes to stuff. Be prepared to be scared. Take ownership of that kind of fear and then see where that can take you. And I would suspect that it will take you to a good place. You know, I can genuinely say there's been very few moments where I've gone, that was a complete and utter disaster. And I wish I'd never, I could have done it better, but I did it and I've learned something from it and I'll be even better next time. So I think I try to live like that.
I think taking that step back from there, someone's asked you to do something, they have confidence in you to do the job. So if that person has said, can you help, can you do this, or can you fulfill this task, they must have faith in you. So I think you just need to take that on board. And again, it's going back to the swimming, you know, I always used to say to people, there'd always be that couple of swimmers that would say, I can't do this. And I'd always say to them, look, you're the only person that's going to say that you can't do it. Everybody around you has faith in you to accomplish what is there in front of you. So it's that whole thing, you know, it's just like take it on board and just go for it. What could go wrong?
What's the worst that can
happen? They've seen something in you to fulfill whatever needs to be done. So just take it on board and go for it. Run. Check out a YouTube video before you go.
Yeah, YouTube is a huge thing. And we joke, but almost we don't. Like, I was doing some editing on a video last week, and one of my friends who's like full-time videographer and works for the Press Association was saying to me about a few things. And I said, oh, how did you do that? He said, I could try and explain it to you, mate, but here's the YouTube video and you'll learn it in 60 seconds. And actually, I came back off it and was like, oh, that actually wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And, you know, you mentioned there, feel the fear and do it anyway. And I think it is. And it's also having people around you who are almost like cheerleaders. You know, as like you said, Graham, I think there's a lot of kids out there in sport, and I'm sure you saw it on your journey with your own kids, Ollie. And actually, sometimes they do need a bit of a, you know, pom-pom waving and banging the drum. But actually, that's the thing that gives them the confidence. And I guess that links into something, obviously, you've got your own journeys you've been on in terms of the sport side of things. But the lessons, I guess, we take from sport, because so many young kids are exposed to sport, and actually it gives them lessons that perhaps they end up using for the rest of their life. You know, the field of fear, if you like, of, and I say this to parents when I do parent talks, imagine walking out in front of 500 people in a swimsuit and delivering a performance at the age of 12. And imagine that the skills that gives you to go and do that in an interview or on a stage or behind a booth in a DJ. You know, all those sorts of things. So what have your experiences been, either for yourself or your own kids, and that kind of sporting journey and the lessons they take from that?
Well, I think exactly that, really, that, you know, what I'm speaking about, this, you know, kind of overcoming, you know, the fear factor. And I know with my daughter, Rosie, she's had terrible kind of nerves initially, with her swimming. And yeah, it sounds really silly. And I can tell exactly what it was, that she had this fear of needing to go to the toilet, particularly in a moment where she couldn't go. And of course, that was compounded, became huge in an environment of a swimming meet, of standing up on the blocks. And suddenly imagine how awful and how embarrassing it would be to have to hold your hand up and say, I need to go to the toilet. And of course, that was all in her mind. But we managed to kind of get through that. And I think for her, it's to take ownership of that and to find the strength. It's a silly little thing, but I think that will have stood her in really good stead. And that, for her, that was her massive fear moment. So kind of it's almost like what can be as bad as that? That was as bad as it came for her age, maybe 11 at the time or whatever. You know, she's 14 now, and it's silly, and she'll probably look back and laugh about it. But I think you have to go through those massive things in order to, you know, to get to a point where you feel happy to say, yes to everything. And same with my little boy. You know, he has, you know, he is essentially a confident lad, but he has moments, you know, with his sport. You know, he plays good quality football. He's playing academy football. He's only 9 years old. There's a lot of pressure on him. But I think, you know, if you kind of combine that with, you know, the kind of light and shade of what he's able to do and still be silly with him and still have fun and make him understand that it is just him kicking a football around. Don't take, you know, put too much pressure on him. That'll stand him in good stead for whatever he ends up being. And of course, he wants to be a professional footballer. Of course, he does. So many young lads do. But I think if I can kind of guide him with giving him these high pressure situations alongside just being silly and being daft with me, then he should be just fine, I think. So,
yeah. I think just looking at sports, I think it's great for people to get involved in sport and do as much sport as they possibly can, because it sets them up for failure to a point. You have to be able to embrace failure, but in a positive way, and think, okay, that didn't go as well as I thought it was going to go. You have to be able to, and also be self-critical and analyze what you've done and what you could do to change the performance. And again, that was just trying to get people to understand. And also basically have a plan what you're about to do, and then look at that plan and reevaluate it and say, okay, did it work? Yes, it did, or no, it didn't. And again, it's good because it sets you up for the future as well, because you are going to have some great successes in business or whatever line, but you're also going to have some huge failures as well. And I think if you can learn and understand that at a very, very young age, or be able to cope with it or have a coping mechanism, I think it will set you up perfectly. You know, both my sons swam, one at a higher level than the other. And there's nothing harder than swimming, apart from maybe running, because it's solitary and it's literally, the environment doesn't change. You don't get to go and play at the Emirates. You go to a local swimming pool and you go up and down, and the tiles are the same. They don't change the tiles on the bottom of the pool. You know, the windows are still there, the same lifeguards. So it's, there's some real discipline.
Yeah, real discipline,
you know, and I feel that has set my two lads up for success, I think. And I'm really proud of how they've turned out. You know, you do hear some horror stories of, you know, unfortunate circumstances, how other people's lives have turned out, how other people's children have turned out. And I'm just blessed that mine have kind of stayed on a good path, if that makes sense.
And it's slightly unconnected to that, but I did want to say, in relation to sport and kids, that, you know, it's a great way of them learning about dealing with disappointment and such forth. But my daughter, she's not going to be a world beater in terms of swimming, but what she does realize is how good it makes her feel. Yeah. And however she feels when she gets into the pool, when she comes out an hour and a half later, she knows that the endorphins are just kicking. She's a different little girl. She's completely energized. And I think it's really interesting. We've never spoken to her about that, but she just knows that it's good for her. It's good for her mental health. She's not a girl that struggles with her mental health per se, but she's a 14-year-old. She could be like, sort of, you know, you see what she's like when she gets up in the morning. She's sort of moping around, doesn't really know what to do with the day. And without the swimming, there would be a danger that she would just sort of drift through the day and have no energy. But when she goes to the pool and she swims, it's incredible. And I know that. And that's one of the reasons I choose to exercise. And anybody, all three of us here, we exercise and to varying degrees. It's really, really important. Yeah, but I think it's fantastic for her. And I think that's something that for the rest of her life, she'll realize the importance of exercise for a healthy mind and to put her in a place to sort of take the day by storm, you know. So, yeah, big advocate of that. I think it's very important for the small people.
And I think also for us, you know, you mentioned that they're around us all still doing various forms of exercise. And I think that you can almost, if you turned on your laptop at 7 o'clock in the morning and said, right, today I'm going to design a new T-shirt, I'm going to create a new video, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Actually get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and go and do a lap around the block, 15 minutes of yoga, have a coffee and sit down and go, right, now I'm ready to attack the day. And I think that kind of thing, you know, there's a really good study that came out a few years ago that looked at the trajectory rates of academics through up to the age of 18 and kids that swam, and actually looked at how many kids stayed in the sport, and then looked at the various age groups. And there was a clear lineage between kids that kind of stayed in long enough for those disciplines, if you like, and those habits to kind of properly root into their human behaviors, and then actually linked to their academic performance. not saying they're all going to go on and do academic things. It's actually just going, it's a good thing for the rest of their life. And I say that to parents a lot of the time, you know, if the one thing we promise your kids is when they leave at the age of 18 and fly the nest, if you like, that they're appreciative of their physical and mental health and how to look after it, we've done all right. Like that's a really good thing.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Completely agree.
So I guess looking forward, since, you know, we're a bit older and wiser than the children that we've just been talking about. So what are the things now that you guys reflecting back? We talked about future a few times there. So now looking forwards, what tools, what are the things that you have picked up so far that you would say are your two or three golden things that you stand by are going to help you take your next leap and whatever comes next?
The first one is I don't know everything. I know there's so much there's so much I need to learn. Listen more and speak less is a key thing, I think. There's a saying, be worried about the person who says nothing because they're listening. And it's very, very valid. You know, they're the ones you need to be worried about or not worried about, but maybe make sure that they are on your team. That would be a couple of things that I would probably, and don't be in a rush to get things finished. Just take your time. Things will follow their course, you know. Just be patient, I think. That would be possibly the three things.
I think, that and I think to surround myself, continue to try and surround myself with good people and to ask for help and not try and do everything myself. The kind of outsource and realize I can't do this particular thing or I can't do that, get the right person in to do that, will just take things forward at a much quicker speed. And also I'm very guilty, I think, in the world we live in with Instagram and social media of comparing myself a little bit. I'll go, I'm doing really well. And I'll think, this is a good, you know, good place. And I'll look at somebody and go, yeah, but oh, they're doing that or they're doing it like this. And oh, I should maybe do it like that because they are very cool. And it's everyone's on their own journey. Do you know what I mean? No one is Ollie Jackson, actor, DJ. You know, clothing brand owner that got to it, became to it in this particular, no one else did it like I've done it. It's completely unique. So there's no set of rules. And I think I'm a little bit guilty of comparing myself and trying to say I should be at this point now because they did it like this. It's good to have people that you look up to and aspire to be like, but don't compare yourself. And I think I'm a little bit guilty of that. So I think surround myself with good people, ask for help and stop comparing.
Some wonderful wisdom there. And I think that last point, especially on comparison, is something I think I struggled with kind of with the first maybe five or six seasons of the podcast, because during the pandemic years, you know, a lot of people started things like podcasts and created YouTube channels and those sorts of things. And episode 13 and episode 18, I had two hosts on of really what is now one of the biggest podcasts in the world. And they were just getting started, certainly when I spoke to the first host. And he said, oh, you know, we've done a few episodes. It's quite cool. We'll see where it goes. And I saw him before Christmas and he said, oh, how are you getting on? And I said, oh, you know, this year I should crack maybe like 25,000 downloads. And he's like, oh, that's amazing. Like, you know, think of all the people's like lives that you've touched and all those sorts of things. And I said, oh, how you got your guys' numbers? And he said, oh, we just broke 13 million downloads. And I was like, but actually, I felt like I'd got to a point where I was happy to hear that it had gone, you know, they've got a full production team and everything else. So it's a very different context. But acknowledging there are other things going on out there, but don't judge your value and your success and the lives that you have touched based on what somebody else has done, because their context and circumstances are completely different. So yeah. I think that's a really nice way to pull it all together. And I think because you guys have such kind of eclectic and diverse interests and those sorts of things, I think the notes under this recording today, there's going to be quite a few links to signpost people to all the different things that you're up to. But I just want to say thank you so much for sharing some time with us, because it's really nice getting people on there that have got so many different interests and sharing those insights, because we've kind of weaved through a range of topics, but it's been really, really interesting.
No, thank you, and hope people find it interesting. That's certainly great talking to you. I thoroughly enjoyed it, so thank you.
A huge thank you for joining us today. You can connect with today's guest and all our Rogue Monkey podcast socials through the links below this episode. If you're involved in a business, we would also love for you to check out our collaboration with Richard Cheatham MBE, our episode 44 guest, the link to which is also in the show notes. Finally, just a quick reminder to subscribe to the podcast, however you're joining us today, and please do pass this episode on to at least one person you think would take inspiration from it. Have a great week, and thanks again for being part of the Rogue Monkey podcast community.